Radio Prague News.
Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík on Thursday took the stand as a witness in the Vít Bárta corruption trial. Prague's Bulovka Hospital will start re-operating patients with PIP breast implants this Saturday. And according to the results of an expert study, Prague's anti-flood barriers are not properly maintained. A Prague 5 court has heard more witnesses in the case of public affairs MP Vít Bárta, who is being tried on charges of corruption. Among the witnesses who took the stand on the fourth day of the closely watched trial was Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík, who is in charge of the government's anti-corruption portfolio. The case centres on the activities of Vít Bárta, who is widely seen as the party's de facto leader and whom two former high-placed party members accuse of having tried to buy their loyalty with large sums of money. Bárta was forced to resign as transport minister after the scandal broke, and the affair has badly tarnished the reputation of the junior coalition party, which won seats in parliament on a strong anti-corruption agenda. Prague's Bulovka Hospital will start re-operating patients with PIP breast implants this Saturday. The hospital said that in order to meet demand from patients who wanted a change of implants without delay, it was scheduling re-op breast surgery for Saturdays throughout the months of March and April. The first five patients are scheduled for surgery this weekend. An estimated 2,000 Czech women received the risky PIP implants, while insurance companies have said they will cover the cost of surgery for women who underwent the operation for health reasons. Those who did so for aesthetic reasons will have to pay for it themselves. According to the results of an expert study published in Thursday's edition of Lidové noviny, Prague's anti-flood barriers are not properly maintained. The paper cites experts as saying that along given stretches of the river, the barriers are so badly damaged that they would not be able to keep out the floodwater. The study contains dozens of pictures supporting these claims. Prague invested 3.7 billion crowns in a flood barrier protection system after the 2002 devastating floods. Police report a heightened interest in street security cameras among the inhabitants of Chomutov, northwest Bohemia. The rise in petty theft and robberies led the police to install 28 security cameras around the town, which has 50,000 inhabitants. Despite the loss of privacy, many people have asked for a camera to be installed right outside the house, and police say they have had to make a waiting list for future security cameras. Two mobile cameras have been installed in high-risk areas. Police say that since the introduction of the security camera network, crime and prostitution have significantly dropped. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. The coming days are expected to be cold and overcast with sleet or snow showers in the higher altitudes, icy roads and day temperatures between 2 and 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, we look at the Polish salt scare involving industrial salt apparently being used in food products. The question here, whether contaminated food was exported to the Czech Republic. We'll also have more from the ongoing One World Film Festival. And a little later in the program, join us for a visit of a new exhibition at Vítkov Hill, once used as a mausoleum for Czechoslovakia's first communist president. Stay tuned. The Polish media have dubbed it Saltgate. Revelations that at least three Polish companies have been selling industrial salt, normally used to de-ice roads, to milk, fish, meat and bread producers. Several countries to which Poland may have exported potentially contaminated food products have been identified: Lithuania, Ireland, England, Germany, and the Czech Republic. This week, the Czech Agriculture Ministry decided to temporarily block the import of salt from Poland while tests are carried out by the State Veterinary Administration to determine if harmful substances such as dioxins and heavy metals found in road salt have made their way into the food chain. Meanwhile, five people have been arrested in Poland in connection with the affair, while the remaining salt in question has been impounded while the country's own chief sanitary inspectorate continues its own tests. Dominic Yoon reports.
The first results are in, and apparently the news is good. The Czech State Veterinary Administration has collected salt samples throughout the Moravian-Silesian region bordering Poland and says it has found nothing out of the ordinary. But it's not over yet. Tests are now continuing in the city of Olomouc on various Polish meat and dairy products which could contain the industrial salt. Meanwhile, authorities in Poland say that recent laboratory tests undertaken in the town of Bulawi suggest that toxin levels found in industrial salt are within acceptable safety limits. So are the fears over just what might have been put into Polish food justified? Czech Agriculture Minister Petr Bendl has thus far ruled out a blanket ban on all Polish food imports. Jan Žáček, a spokesperson for the Czech Ministry of Agriculture, explains the process.
There is a risk that such salt being imported to the Czech Republic. That's why we started controlling the salt. We banned the Polish salt, not all the Polish food products. We could only make that if we will find anything harmful to the consumers during the testing of the salt and also the food products. We will require the European Union to stop the import of Polish food to Czech Republic, but we can make it only if we find something in the tests.
Žáček also explained the perceived nature of the threat.
There's a threat of food contamination by harmful substances in the salt from Poland. The salt is normally used in the technical industry and can include such harmful substances as heavy metals. In Czech Republic, we start testing imported salt as well as the salt already used in food production, and we are testing them for undesirable elements. All the results of the test will be available at the end of this week.
Meanwhile, efforts to secure more information from Poland continue. One other piece of good news is that the Czech authorities have found that direct salt imports to the country are largely from other EU countries and not Poland. Meanwhile, the State Veterinary Administration is also providing provisional reassurances, stating that industrial salt is comprised of 98% salt, with the other 2% usually mostly comprised of anti-caking agents. But the process has not been entirely smooth, with complaints by Agriculture Minister Bendl that initial disclosures by Poland, specifically relating to which products may have contained the industrial salt, were insufficiently detailed. Jan Žáček again.
Our minister, Petr Bendl, sent an official letter to the Polish minister, Marek Sawicki, asking the whole list of all the companies using the technical salt in Poland, and further cooperation, and we are waiting now for a reply.
The European Commission is, like many concerned consumers, also keeping a close eye on the matter. Poland, meanwhile, expects its food exports to suffer as a result of this scandal. Whether ultimately there's cause for more alarm or a sigh of relief should become clear within the next few days.
Dominic Yoon reporting on Poland's salt gate and whether the Czech Republic may have been affected. Certainly very unpleasant image there, thinking that industrial salt used for de-icing roads may have made it into food. Very, very unpleasant. If you'd like to comment that story or anything else that you hear in today's program, don't forget it's easy to contact us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz to write to us, or Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. Now, as part of this year's edition of the One World International Human Rights Film Festival, which is currently on in Prague, the German-produced independent documentary Radioactivists Protest in Japan provides a rare and up-close look at Japanese protests in the wake of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. It is being shown in the Youthquake category, which features films that portray young people's struggle for change in countries around the world. Sarah Borufka asked co-director Clarissa Seidel, who made the film together with her good friend Julia Lesser, about Japanese protest culture and whether she was at all interested in the country prior to the film project.
I did have interest in Japan, but it was through a close friend who actually did the movie with me, Julia Lesa, and she was still studying Japanese studies, and she was in Japan, and I visited her, and we were there for the earthquake, went back to Germany together, and that's actually when we planned the film.
What was it like to film in a country that had just recently been struck by such an enormous disaster?
Well, it's really closely connected to our film's topic, so it's pretty central for our film. But we did the film because we were really surprised by the positive vibes of the people who went to demonstrate, because that's what our film is about. So it was actually, it's a really bad catastrophe, but it was, there were those positive things, this energy that we wanted to keep on film.
Now, if you don't know Japan very well, the one thing you might know about Japanese people is that you don't picture them being on the street screaming and protesting. That's not really the stereotype of Japanese culture, I would say. So what is protest like in that society?
That's actually a reason why we made the film, because it's something really special when people go onto the streets, because they used to go onto the streets in the 60s with the student protests, but since then there have been no major demonstrations. So they found this new way, or imported a new way of demonstrating, which the sound demos, with a lot of music and dancing. So that was really crucial for gathering so many people.
And now it's about a year after Fukushima. Are you following the latest developments in Japan? And where is the country now compared to where it was then?
There's a big opposition to nuclear energy now, and that is something really special. Where there's still a lot of work ahead of them is to get this opposition into the parliament, into the government, because the official course of the government is still not where the people are. Let's put it that way.
And in your native country of Germany, of course, Fukushima has really led the politicians there to rethink their energy policy. Do you think that's a good thing, personally?
Of course it is. Of course it is. And that decision is a model for other countries, too, although a lot of people forget that there already was that decision to abolish nuclear energy. But now we're back to that, and hopefully keep it that way.
And that was filmmaker Clarissa Zeidel talking about the film that she co-directed with her good friend, Radio Activists Protest in Japan, on view at the ongoing One World Film Festival here in the Czech Republic, in Prague. Now, though, we turn to today's main feature, Panorama, with Daniela Lazarova.
The National Museum has just opened an exhibition highlighting the personality cult of the first Czechoslovak communist president, Klement Gottwald. The exhibition, named Laboratory of Power, is located in Prague's Vítkov Memorial, which the communist regime turned into a mausoleum for Gottwald after his death in 1953. One of the exhibition's organizers, Marek Vitek, took me through the underground rooms built for the army of people who took care of the embalmed body for 9 long years. He started out by explaining how the memorial underwent a significant transformation after the communists took power.
It was built in the so-called First Czechoslovak Republic as a memorial of the legionaries. They were soldiers who fought in the First World War for freedom of Czechoslovakia, and also this building had to commemorate the First Czechoslovak Republic. After the communist break in 1948, communists didn't know what to do with this building, and about 3 years later they decided to change the conception of this building, and they started to call it the Proletarian Pantheon. It means that important members of Communist Party were buried here. When Klement Gottwald died in 1953, Klement Gottwald was the first Czechoslovak communist president. Communists were inspired in Moscow by mausoleum of Lenin or Stalin, and they decided to build here mausoleum of Klement Gottwald. During 6 months, they completely built underground of this building, and they built Clement Gottwald Mausoleum. And Clement Gottwald laid here as a mummy from 1953 to 1962.
Can you briefly tell me what it is that you're showing here in this exposition?
Mm-hmm. Now we stand in Valin, we stand in leading room, something like operation part of this mausoleum. And everything what the visitors can see here is original from this period. All this stuff, all the equipment, all the instruments are from the 1950s.
What are they for?
So, because in mausoleum there had to be constant condition, there had to be constant temperature, pressure. All this equipment took care about this condition here in the mausoleum.
I must say that the atmosphere here is very, very oppressive. I would say morbid even, but I suppose that is your intention, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, and we want it to make here some oppressive condition, because it's condition of this period, because there's no escape from the 1950s, and there is no escape here in this part of exhibition. Visitors can see, for example, lights, and they can escape, but they see guns. So this is about this period, how people felt in this time.
I should say that we're standing in a very small room. Basically, all this is grey concrete, and there are lots of knobs and switches and clocks around us in this operation room. And then we're about to walk through an extremely narrow, grey, dark corridor that hasn't even been lit properly, intentionally, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yes,
where are we moving? What are we moving towards now?
Now we are moving to a laboratory, to the place where doctors took care of that body of Clement Gottwald.
This looks like an autopsy room. It's scary. There's, in a glass case, there is a body or a model of a body under a white sheet and lots of clinical stuff. And everything is in white tiles. There is nothing else in the room.
We came to a laboratory when doctors took care of body Clement Gottwald. So during 1950s, several doctors from Soviet Union, later from the Czechoslovakia, made some new mummification of body Clement Gottwald, and they made everyday cleaning of this space and of this mummy here in this space. And on the ceiling we can see some special space, and there was lift, and by this lift body of Clement Gottwald was taken up to the mausoleum, where people of Czechoslovakia can look at this dead body.
So how long did you say, how many years did it spend here?
9 years.
9 years, and they were able to keep it in good condition during that time, or...
Yes, of course, they took care about this body, but we don't know the exactly conditions, because we don't have any archive materials, and we have some memoirs of people who worked here. But they are very different, because some of them tells us that the body of Clement Gottwald was completely destroyed in this period.
That certain body parts disintegrated,
yes,
during that time.
Yes, this body was disintegrated, and
were they replaced with
Yes, and so they had to replace, for example, hands or arms, and so on. But we have memoirs of one doctor who worked here, and he says that the body was completely okay, that nothing happened with it. So it's very hard to say what's happened in this period, because last materials are from the year 1960, and we don't know what happened in the next 2 years. So
how many doctors actually took care of the body on a regular basis?
It was about 5 doctors, but this place inhibited about 100 people. 100 people worked here and took care about this one dead body.
How long were they intending to keep it here?
I think forever. When they started, when they built this mausoleum, President Antonín Zápotocký told that they want to save this body forever. But of course it wasn't possible because in 1962 in Czechoslovakia appeared a big schism of personality cult and Klement Gottwald was guilty for all that happened in 1950s, so it wasn't possible to show his dead body here. So in this year his body was burned and Klement Gottwald stayed in one sarcophag here in this memorial to the end of communist period.
So he is buried here, his ashes are here somewhere still?
No, his ashes stayed here till 1990, and after the Velvet Revolution, all ashes from this monument took away. So his ash is now at Olšany Cemetery, and there is a common grave where is about 20 people from this monument. Yes,
communist leaders.
Yes, communist leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And communist party of Czech lands took care of this grave.
It must have been quite awful for these doctors to be brought here to work on the body, and I suppose that they were bound to secrecy. They were not allowed to speak of what went on here.
Yes, that's true. Of course, this place was top secret in this period, and the doctors they had no choice. They had to work here in mausoleum because if they refused, they could be oppressed or something like this.
By the way, where did you get the information about everything that went on? Have you spoken, for instance, to some of the doctors, or are they long dead who were here and who took care of the body?
So we have several sources, of course. At first, we have some archive materials that are in National Archive here in Prague. And of course, we tried to find people who worked here in this memorial during 1950s. So it's very, very interesting because some of them, they spoke with us, and some of them, they refused, and they said that they were afraid to speak with us. And it's very strange because mausoleum is closed more than 50 years, and they really didn't want to talk with us. So we discussed only with three persons who worked here, but they were in very important positions. One of them was doctor who took care of this body. One of them was engineer who took care about instruments, about climatization and humidity and so on, temperature. And one of them was son of Jan Zázvorka. It was architect who arranged the body of Klement Gottwald in sarcophag. So we talked with these three people, and every one of them has different memories about what happened here. It's very, very interesting.
In what way?
Because one says that the body of Klement Gottwald was completely okay, one of them says that it was completely destroyed, and so on. So there are differences, contradictory.
But what I meant was, how do they remember the times they worked here? Were they all forced to work here?
Some of them, yes, but of course some of them did it for money because it was very good paid job here. And so when they remembered this time, they say that it was time of fear, that it was all under control and it wasn't very pleasant work or job. And they were glad when mausoleum was closed in 1962 and they did official job somewhere else.
Clearly it marked some of them for life if some of them are still afraid to speak today.
Yes, that's right.
That edition of Panorama was produced by Daniela Lazareva, and she was talking to guest Marek Junek, one of the organizers of a new exhibition on at Vítkov Hill here in the capital, an exhibition focusing on the cult of personality of Czechoslovakia's first communist president, Klement Gottwald, whose body was stored there for years in the 50s and 60s. It was used as a mausoleum. If you'd like to comment, one more recommendation that you contact us here at the station, english@radio.cz. Some of you may know the history of that mausoleum well. If so, why not drop us a line here at Radio Prague. We're quickly moving up to our final feature for this day, though, which is another edition of ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax.
And welcome to another episode of the ABC of Czech. As usual, I'm joined in the studio by Vladimír Tax.
Dobrý den.
Last we talked about dogs, so today it can be nothing else but the cat.
Kočka.
The word stands for the whole species and also for a female cat. A male cat, a tomcat, is
kocour.
Each of these words also has a secondary meaning, while
kočka
is an attractive young woman.
Kocour,
or even better,
starý kocour,
means a lecherous old man. An interesting example of language sexism there, favouring for a change the feminine gender. There are markedly fewer cat idioms than dog idioms in Czech, but still we found a few for you, most of them similar to English cat idioms. However, we start with one for which there is no direct translation in English. If something doesn't work properly, if it has poor quality or turns out badly, Czechs say it is for a cat.
Pro kočku.
It probably used to mean that something is only good for a cat.
Pro kočku.
Just like in the English-speaking world, Czech cats have 9 lives.
Kočka má 9 životů.
The saying most likely comes from ancient Egypt, where the cat was revered, among other qualities, for its resilience and a remarkable ability to survive. 9 is a magical number, and at the same time high enough to symbolize that cats can endure a lot. So, once again,
kočka má 9 životů.
Therefore, cats can escape unscathed when they get into a fight with dogs. Cat and dog fights have become proverbial in Czech too.
Jsou na sebe jako pes a kočka.
They behave towards each other like a dog and a cat. They can't stand each other, they always snap at each other.
Jsou na sebe jako pes a kočka.
Another animal that appears in phrases together with cats is, of course, the mouse. To play cat and mouse means to behave to somebody in a cruel or teasing way and leave them in uncertainty.
Hrát si s někým jako kočka s myší.
Literally, to play with someone like a cat with a mouse.
Hrát si s někým jako kočka s myší.
But when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Když kocour není doma, myši mají pré.
Literally, when the tomcat is not at home, the mice are free. Without supervision, people will misbehave.
Když kocour není doma, myši mají pré.
So that's all for today, I'm afraid, but you can join us next time for another edition of the ABC of Czech. Until then, it's goodbye.
Naschledanou.
The ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková and colleague Vladimír Tax brings us to the end of today's program. You'll find more news stories and reports at our website, radio.cz. Also, don't forget to take part in the discussion on Facebook or to sign up for tweeting on Twitter. Radio Prague is on there too. And also, if you visit our website, radio.cz, you can learn about our new monthly quiz. 6 people, I believe, will be awarded a Radio Prague prize each month for guessing the hidden identity of a chosen person, a person chosen in advance. And always at the beginning of the month, you'll find all the clues, all the details at our website under a special banner for our new monthly quiz. For now, though, it's goodbye. I'm Jan Wellinger, and thanks for joining us. Take care.